right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
This program is sponsored by A Different Book List. Located at 779 Bathurst Street, A Different Book List is an African-Canadian-owned bookstore specializing in the rich literature of African and Caribbean diaspora and the Global South. For more information, visit www.adifferentbooklist.com.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men.
And welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And today we're going to be talking about Black History Month. We're going to be talking to Fred Anderson. He's the author of Eyes Have Seen, From Mississippi to Montreal, a memoir. And I can't think of anybody more appropriate to be talking to about Black History Month than Fred Anderson. Are you there, Mr. Anderson?
Hello, Phil. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I'm really glad we're talking to you, as I mentioned, because you've been part of the Montreal community, the Black community that has established Black History Month. And, there's been a kind of sequence. Way back, I guess it was Dr. Woodson, right, who argued that we should have this.
Yeah, it was Dr. Carter G. Woodson. He was a Black historian, and he had also founded an organization called the Association for the Study of Negro Life, which published some very, very important books about Black history. Dr. Woodson himself wrote a fabulous book called The History of the Negro Church. He also wrote one on education entitled The Miseducation of the Negro. And so he founded what was first Negro History Month. Mm-hmm. And then years later, it was expanded to Black History Month, mm-hmm. and both Negro History Month, following on the heels of Negro History Week, Dr. Woodson chose the month of February because it was the birth month of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. You know, in that title, if I caught it right, the miseducation of the Negro,
That's correct.
And, you know, it's so striking because it is all of our miseducation by establishing Black History Month, he's correcting history itself.
Exactly.
And you've contributed mightily to that, your own life experience. It must be for you to think about this. Your book and your life, you were at one of those tipping points in history where people acting, Black leaders acting on the thought of people like Dr. Woodson, found themselves by just saying, let's talk about history. That was part of the challenge. It wasn't only let's go in the streets, but for crying out loud, can you guys face your own history? It was, liberty and equality for all, et cetera.
Well, Well, precisely. And Dr. Woodson's innovative thinking to bring about Negro History Week. I was a young boy, in elementary school and junior high school, and we, of course, like in all the black schools in the South and across the United States, benefited from the lessons and the stories that he brought to us, which played a huge role in boosting our self-esteem and motivated us to be part of efforts to make a change. And of course, testament to what he did is if we bring it to the modern day, his leaning on black history and miseducation is part of the reasons why we see this concentrated efforts by the right to erase those accomplishments and that story.
And here we are today. You're a living argument against the current president of the United States. You're from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and if I understand it rightly, the county, and I want to know, is the county still named after the Civil War general who helped found the Ku Klux Klan?
Yeah. Nathan Forrest, Forrest County is still Forrest County.
Ooh.
The county seat of Hattiesburg.
And you have a president who says he wants to make America great again, and he's standing, I saw him, I guess, 2 days ago, I saw some footage of him addressing soldiers, the United States Army.
At Fort Bragg, yeah.
Yeah, at Fort Bragg, and he says, we are officially making this now your good old name Fort Bragg. And Bragg was one of the worst racist, bigoted slave owners. I mean, he was the bottom rung.
He also recently made the incomprehensible statement that the civil rights movement was one of the major forces of degrading and holding back whites. And his vice president J.D. Vance was at a national event where he told the audience, "We're glad to be at a point in the country when you no longer have to apologize for being white."
Yeah. And by the way, I'd like to know whoever did ask him to apologize. All we're talking about is what is reality, right?
Exactly. No. Exactly.
Go ahead and be J.D. Vance. Who cares?
Exactly.
I mean, it's his problem. You know, there are people who are so ignorant, you can't help them.
Well, you know, you mentioned Montreal and Black History Month. We're now celebrating the 35th edition of Black History Month in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1991, there was a group of us, including the late Dr. Clarence Baines, Carr Whitaker, Noah Alexander, who at the time was president of the Jamaica Association of Montreal, and Dan Phillips, who was president of the Black Coalition of Quebec, myself and Pat Dillon, we were involved in research trying to determine the current condition of the and status and challenges of the Montreal Black English-speaking community. In 1991, we went to City Hall to present that to the municipal government. John Doré was the mayor at that time of the Montreal Citizens Movement Administration, which was quite a progressive administration. And we met with him and the executive committee to present that brief. And we outlined some medium and long-term goals that the city needed to accomplish in regards to English-speaking Black Montrealers. And we said, we realize these are short and long-term goals, but immediately we are urging you to declare the month of February officially as Black History Month in Montreal. And he did so. So that was the geniuses of Black History Month in Montreal. And here we are 35 years later.
Yeah, and now, by the way, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, I guess Black History Month became a U.S. Officially a Black History Month when, under, of all people, President Gerald Ford, at the tail end of the Nixon disaster. But it took years. It was years later that Canada came around to this. And of course, you've had the struggle in Montreal for the Black History Month. And it's true, isn't it, that when you look at those intellectuals and lawyers and movement people who have been fighting for basically simply equality and recognition, it was the leaders of those of the actual struggles that added on, and we want a Black History Month.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you founded a Congress of Black Writers, right, some years ago.
No, I didn't. I was not the organizer or originator of that. Mm-hmm. But I was certainly one of the people in a group of people who supported it and participated in it, for mm-hmm. sure.
So but the initiators, it was those struggles that made this finally something that those who have the most power said, well, we better do this.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a huge historical moment, because what the Black Congress did was it internationalized the Black struggle. Because it brought some of the most sought-after Black intellectuals from across the world here in Montreal and 1968, mm-hmm. and it ensured that Montreal became centralized as part of the international Black struggle.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Fred Anderson, the author of Eyes Have Seen, From Mississippi to Montreal, a memoir that's Barack a book, and I just it struck me. I know you're giving talks across Quebec, and I saw you were interviewed by CTV News. I was very glad of that. I hope, by the way, that happily with the internet, you can go back and actually find things. And I would urge people to read the text and also listen to the interview that was done. You are, of course, one of the core people of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, together with Bob Moses and others. And you describe in your book discussions of leaders, and it seems to me very poignant and memorable and important today, because you were using a term, participatory democracy. And, you came to a country opposing the Vietnam War and, of course, escaping injustice in the U.S. And it wasn't long after, around the same time, that Pierre Trudeau, the prime minister, began to use the word in order to because there was some cachet in that term, participatory democracy. Could you talk about what was going on in the discussion of SNCC at that time, and how important that idea is?
Well, it was important for all the policy discussions that we had, or any strategy that we chose to implement. And it was just a concept that we were an organization where all voices were important and that all voices had to be taken into account in decision-making. And so, therefore, we had to reach a consensus in terms of policy and actions. Mm-hmm. So it was not a top-down organization, mm-hmm. and no voice took precedent over another voice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for other organizations, it could be very frustrating because our meetings were necessarily long and deliberative, mm-hmm. because we had to ensure that everybody was heard, mm-hmm. and that a consensus had to be reached. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful concept, participatory democracy, and it was something. Our goal was to make sure that was a philosophy that would be adopted by governments and all civil organizations.
Yeah, I was struck in reading the book that in discussing that. At one point, you decided there was, you know, they wanted to talk about policy, SNCC did, and they said, well, people should submit discussions or arguments, in writing, what they think should be done. But they didn't. But the decision was, don't put your name on it, so that people can look at the idea itself without getting involved with the personality. That was something.
Exactly.
That was something.
Well, exactly, because we didn't want whatever your status was in the organization, we didn't want to accord that status in a discussion, accord it more significance than anybody else in the organization. So you weren't looking at a paper and making a decision because it was submitted by Bob Moses or Stokely Carmichael or John Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
All discussions and all positions were anonymous in decision making.
Yeah. I assume you still believe in all that, right? I mean, in other words, that was the best formula in terms of trying to, and you also believe very much in trying to create what you, I think it's called a circle of confidence. I like that phrase.
Circle of trust.
I'm sorry.
Circle of trust.
Yes, a circle of trust. I don't know why that isn't on everybody's top of the list. You know, even I think of history of church and religious organization. They used to say, okay, now we're all going to have a prayer about this. They interrupt the whole process and say, let's pray.
Exactly. No, you were asking me if that was something that I still believe in. I certainly do. It's the principle of my life. It informs my approach to everything.
Yeah. Well, in the book, as I've seen, there's quite a bit of evidence of that. I hope that idea is shared because. Strikes me that as strong as your political work was and how dangerous and all that, in the back of your mind, you always kept open the possibility you could be mistaken. And you tell stories about, I would call them superstitious. I mean, something happens in town and people say, well, that's the work of the angel, or that's the work of somebody who's been touched. And I'm glad you put that in there, because so many people who would consider themselves advanced and sophisticated would say, well, we better not mention that. But
because one of the reasons I entitled the book Eyes of Seeing is because there are so many different ways of seeing and so many ways of apprehending reality. And acting on that,
mm-hmm.
and so that if you want people to buy in and people to mobilize, you have to take into account all the ways that people see and all the ways that that people experience. And it's so important that when you're asking people to put their lives behind what you decided and to stand up and face danger, you cannot do it mm-hmm. without demonstrating that you honor the way that they see and apprehend reality.
Yeah. That goes back to Black Church. How could anything have happened without the Black Church?
Yeah. Would not have happened.
Yeah.
Such an incredible institution. One of the examples that I have always loved is James Weldon Johnson, who was a Black lawyer and a poet. James Weldon Johnson, he is the one who crafted the Negro national anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. And his brother, who was a musician, is the one that put it to music. James Weldon Johnson was someone who fully understood the importance of the Black church. He wrote a book of poems, seven Negro sermons in verse. And one of the very resounding lines in one of the sermons was he related how there was this young Black man who wanted to be a minister, and he went off to the North and he attended some of the most prestigious seminaries and was ordained, and he returned to the South and he was giving a sermon in a Black rural church. And he said he started off giving this sermon, and it was all in Kierkegaardian language, and the congregation sat on their hands in total silence. And he realized that this wasn't going to work, so he slammed the Bible shut, and he looked out over the congregation, and he said, "Brothers and sisters, this morning I am going to explain to you the indescribable. I am going to unscrew the inscrutable." and he had the congregation's attention.
Yeah. Can I get an amen?
Yeah, exactly.
This is
I'm going to define the indefinable.
That really underlines something really important in my mind, listening to this, is that we need Weldon Johnson's books to be on every shelf, like your book should be on every shelf. And by the way, it's well on its way to be on every shelf, I'm glad to say, eyes have seen. But reading was, the slave owner said, do not let them read, and made it a law. So why aren't we all militant readers? you would know. You led the way.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was punishable by death to teach a slave to read and write. Punishable by death.
Yeah. A good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And
in fact, Frederick Douglass learned to read and write is because the mistress of the slave plantation taught him to do so.
Yeah.
And when her husband found out, he beat her and said, this is punishable by death. You're putting, we'll lose the plantation.
Yes. He won't work, and he'll try to get away, or she.
Yeah.
And But again, that's where the path is.
Exactly, you know, and you take and that extent that punishment by death, I mean, extended beyond the slave era. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, all across the South, black people, we did not have access to local libraries. We could not use them.
You have a relative that sent you books from Ohio?
Well, exactly. We had relatives in the North who sent us books to read because you couldn't get them in the South, and you couldn't use the library.
I hope that Black History Month will get us all to be smarter and freer, and I don't know how we can do that if we don't make reading and following the best minds in history. I don't know how we're going to ever get out of any problems. It can't be done. You can't do it on Twitter. I know that.
Right, and you know that type of history is one of the reasons why, during the Mississippi Freedom Summer Project, that one of SNCC's major programs was the establishment of freedom schools across the South. And one of the reasons we ensured that there were local libraries across the South where black kids could have access to those kinds of reading.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a major accomplishment, and it continues to roll on. And we're so proud to be talking to Fred Anderson, who is the author of Eyes Have Seen, from Mississippi to Montreal. And I can't get enough of it. Fred, we really appreciate it very, very much. And thank you for working so hard to establish Black History Month in Montreal.
And thank you, Phil. If I'm not mistaken, I think this is our third conversation. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to thank you again for your support and the promotion of Eyes Have Seen. Very grateful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks again, and we hope to talk to you soon.
All right, Phil. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Fred Anderson, Eyes Have Seen, from Montreal, Mississippi to Montreal. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and in a little bit we're going to be talking to David Kidd of the Toronto Workers' History Project. We have a little music, and we'll be back.